Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here this weekend. As always, happy to be here, regardless of whether or not I could grab any guests to join me. That's okay, we got someone at the end of the show. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program's continued existence. Without it, well, this program wouldn't exist at all. We've been around since 2013, that entire time, been around under Main Street Radio Network's umbrella. There we go, under their umbrella. So we appreciate that. And, you know, we will actually be turning 12 in about 3 months, so almost there, almost 12 years old. Isn't that nice? I don't know what you can do at the age of 12, but so I guess nothing special about it. So whatever, just wait till 15, then I'll say it's our quinceañera or whatever, if that's the proper pronunciation of that. Anyway, if you like this program, you want to show some gratitude to the folks behind it, go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. Not the folks like doing it, but the backers of it. Go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. And, you know, they also back the First Amendment, which is really fortunate because we say things in this program they disagree with. So go to mainstreetradionetwork.com, show some gratitude and appreciation. Give them a hit on that web browser, on that web page of theirs. And you can find out more about this show. You can find out more about the Alan Nathan Show. I guest hosted for him earlier this week. So, you know, that's a good reason to find out about the Alan Nathan Show, because I might be on there sometimes. Although, if you just don't like the way this show sounds, maybe you like how Alan sounds when he hosts. You know, either way, you got to check him out. And he's also at alannathan.com, because he's the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist talk host in the country. So, he has his own website. Been around and doing his stuff since 1998, whereas we've just been doing this show since 2013. So, a bit of a difference there. Anyway, and I mean, heck, I've only been on the airwaves permanently since 2021, so, you know, I'm new to everything now relative to him. And we want to thank the Salem Radio Network as well for distributing this show. We are on social media. Got some pages you can check out. GetterGETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show. I was at least relatively good about it earlier this week in that I did update about the Alan Nathan Show when I guest hosted, so give me credit for that for once. Usually I can host two or three times for him and won't update anyone on it until Saturday, well after, you know, it's already been done. So we have that. And then also you can find us on Facebook or Wimkin at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio. And you know what? You might also see if I'm hosting or not by following Alan Nathan on X at Alan Nathan. And I did not get to these topics earlier this week, so this is something new, content not just recycled from the show earlier this week. But we have, let's see, going on right now, the mayor of D.C. I did talk a bit about, at length, about the D.C. takeover, Trump's D.C. takeover earlier this week when I was guest hosting for Alan, and just the ridiculousness of the left's reaction, because this stuff has been done before. It's not like the D.C. has always been some sovereign territory. Until the early 70s, the federal government controlled what was going on with it, right? So, and as far as these crimes, this surge that Trump is doing right now, that's also a tried and true tactic. CNN's Ellie Honig admitted as much, that this is something law enforcement does all the time. You got high crime in an area, you surge law enforcement resources, that makes the people feel safer, that deters criminals for a little bit, and overall just has an effect of dampening crime for a little while. Perfectly valid things, except now the left is going nutso over it, of course, because they're like, oh, Trump is the fascist dictator taking over D.C. now and taking over our city, which I guess it really is their city, isn't it? With 94% of D.C. residents voting Democrat, that can't really get, I think that might be the most skewed representation in the United States. But, so the thing is, though, if it were really as serious as they claim, you know, if they really felt as badly as they do about Trump taking over, why is it that the mayor of D.C. right now is going to Martha's Vineyard for a little vacation. Got a little family thing going on there she wants to go to. Eh, screw you guys in D.C. I'm going to fly up to Martha's Vineyard. You know, it's like Hamas's leaders living in Qatar while, you know, Gaza is being pounded into oblivion by the Israelis targeting the rocket sites and whatnot. So why is the mayor leaving the city if it's as serious as they claim, right? Doesn't make much sense, does it? You'd think the mayor would stay with the city, go down with the sinking ship, or stay to resist, resist, resist. Hashtag resistance, right? That's what the Democrats were all about during Trump's first term. Where's the resistance now? The mayor of D.C., while it's being having its fascist takeover, is flying to Martha's Vineyard for a vacation? She's taking it as seriously as the residents should. And, you know, MSNBC's Joe Scarborough, actually, he pointed out how Democrat friends of his who live in D.C., you know, they're messaging him saying, yeah, we're actually in favor of this. The crime here is really out of control. We need the surge. But then those same people, they go out onto social media and start attacking the president, attacking the president as a fascist or whatever. And then I guess they can't even get D.C. residents to come out and protest. Maybe they're afraid of getting stabbed or something, but they can't get them out because there's this group where you can hire protesters. You can hire paid protesters because that's a whole industry. We've talked about, well, I've talked about either on this show or the Al Nathan show before, the paid protesters all across the country. Yeah, I've talked about it in both programs before. Paid protesters all across the country, how you had a laundry list of 200 organizations getting together to create those protests earlier this year, the No Kings protests, the anti-Tesla protests, whatever. And there's this organization of professional protesters I've mentioned before on the shows or on the Al Nathan show, one of those two as well. And that group is reporting a 400% increase year to date, or from this time last year, 400% increase from this time last year in the amount of protesters that they're being called upon to provide in the D.C. area. So, like, you have headlines on Breitbart about how D.C. residents are protesting against fascism or whatever. That's actually somewhat questionable because you have these D.C. residents protest authorities cracking down on crime as fascists. Headline from Breitbart right there. But it's questionable how many of those people are actually D.C. residents or how many people in that protest are serious and how many are just paid agitators brought on by this crowd company, this rent-a-crowd company. And the fact that the mayor sees the situation as so grave that she's taken a vacation during it, come on. Actually, it's kind of funny because part of the reason crime got so out of control is because the D.C. government refused to do anything about it except doctor the numbers to keep their jobs. But if that's the case, if they were so concerned about their jobs that they were willing to doctor the numbers, then why is she on vacation? Because that's not going to look good to the voters. That's if this whole thing has been about appearance to voters, why is she doing something that looks really, really, really dumb to voters? Like, oh, you're protesting the takeover of the city, but you're not actually in the city when it's going on? Really? You're abandoning us here after coming out after... Well, actually, the mayor of D.C., she hasn't been too against the Trump takeovers. So far, the quotes I've seen from her have been denying that there was that bad of a problem, but welcoming the help that the extra law enforcement will get, and then just saying, we'll see what happens about if Trump's going to do a takeover or not. So, like, she's been rather guarded in her statements and now taking a vacation. So I guess she knows just as well that the crime situation is out of control, and she's hoping that this will help her election chances. But again, what are these optics here of going on vacation to Martha's Vineyard when your city is in such a crisis? Whether it's the crisis of the crime that you refuse to prosecute, whether it's the crisis of democracy, as Democrats are saying, either way, you're abandoning your post there. But maybe she just knows that the city, because of how radical left it is, they're going to vote for her no matter what. And and because of how corrupt it is, there's not going to be a primary challenge. I talked about this earlier on the Al Nathan show this week, how, like, I didn't really understand why they bothered to fake the crime data in the first place, because it's not like anyone's going to be vacate. It's not like anyone's going to vote Republican in that city. It's not like anyone's going to primary her. D.C. Democrats have a pretty tight control on their party there. So nobody was in any danger of losing their jobs over the high crime. You know, they talk about it being at a 30-year low compared to this alleged spike in 2023. Well, it's probably as high, if not higher, than that spike in 2023 when they doctored the numbers. And even at that, it's still probably not enough to throw them out of office as far as the Democrat voters of the city are concerned. Okay, maybe they might go from winning 100% of the vote to winning 99% of the vote. Wow. Wow. You lost 1% of the vote by not fighting crime. Okay. That's not going to be a problem for the Democrats. So really, this theater of theirs is just theater for an insane audience or whatever. More Silker Joshua after this break.
Everyone's using it, but not everyone is talking about it, and that's AI in the workplace. Kelsey Warren, founder of the Seamless Coach LLC, shares why many employees say they're keeping this, along with their feelings about other technologies, to themselves, and what business and IT leaders can learn.
According to new research from Cox Business, 60% of Gen Z and millennials feel positive about the growing role of AI at work and use AI tools for everything from summarizing meetings to creative brainstorming. But about half of both groups are nervous to admit how much the role of AI technology plays in their productivity. Fear of job loss and uncertainty about companies' AI policies factor into employees' hesitancy to speak up. The survey also revealed that despite being confident in their ability to adopt new technology, nearly 70% feel overwhelmed by the number of tools they're expected to use at work.
For more information and to see the full survey, visit coxblue.com/workplace-tech-survey.
On November 13, 2022, four University of Idaho students were brutally murdered in the quiet college town of Moscow, Idaho. Within the devastated community, questions and fear abound. A new documentary series on Prime Video, One Night in Idaho, The College Murders, investigates this shocking event to uncover the truth. The twists and turns of what happened after the murders, an explosion of online digging, a cross-country manhunt, a dramatic arrest and a looming trial made this one of the most talked about stories in recent memory. This was a case that captured the country's attention and fed its paranoia. It was one of the highest profile stories of the last decade, and it created a lot of social media sleuths who tried to find answers. One Night in Idaho, The College Murders delivers enlightening details from those involved in and affected by the crimes and explores the continued impact and fallout. One Night in Idaho, The College Murders, premieres July 11th only on Prime Video.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand?
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. Everybody, Silker Joe Show co-host Joe filling in for Alan. What am I saying? I was about to say I'm filling in for Alan today while he's on assignment. My brain is halfway to the Alan Nathan Show because I was about to say to the audience that this is the Silker Joe Show, mind you. If you had listened to the Alan Nathan Show, I think earlier this week, maybe it was on Monday, then you would have heard a guest talking about how the Department of Energy has come out with this new climate report, and it's actually bringing science back into the fold as opposed to the climate superstition. Well, now they're being sued for it. Now the Trump administration's being sued for it. Here we are at the end of the week, being sued for what's happened at the beginning of the week. And joining us now to talk about this, we have Gregory Wrightstone. He is a geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. He is a best-selling author of A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. Gregory Wrightstone, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Oh, really good. Yeah, that the Natural Resources Defense Council is suing the EPA and Lee Zeldin to stop and halt the repeal of what's called the endangerment finding. And maybe we should unpack exactly what that is, because a lot of your listeners probably don't know. They might have heard of it. It goes back to 2009 during the Obama administration. Their EPA declared that carbon dioxide is a pollutant, and so they could regulate it as a pollutant, and that's what they've done in spades, actually. This particular repeal is a repeal of the endangerment finding as it impacts vehicles, cars and light trucks and such. And they filed this lawsuit in Massachusetts. It looks like they went judge or district court shopping to get a very favorable judge instead of filing it here in D.C. It would still be in the Fifth Circuit in D.C., but still, this Massachusetts court's, it's likely to rule favorably when it actually gets there. Now, the end result is what we believe at the CO2 Coalition was, no matter what was going to happen, it was going to end up at the Supreme Court. And due to some recent Supreme Court rulings in 2024, the Supreme Court should rule favorably in supporting a repeal of this, and a repeal of this would be huge for all of your listeners. It would be huge because it'll restore freedoms that they've systematically have lost. They may not even know it, but your listeners don't have the freedom to choose what kind of dishwasher, washing machine, dryer, even the ceiling fan above your head has all been regulated to death because of this endangerment finding. So this might be Liberation Day when this finally goes away.
Hmm. Oh, wait. So does that mean hypothetically, because I have I brought a probably 40-year-old ceiling fan into this household, does that mean that was illegal for me to do that?
No, but you just can't buy it. What they've done, for example, is you can buy a high efficiency dishwasher. Let's just use a dishwasher. You can buy it. If the government has approved it, that efficiency. Now, the government definition of efficiency is how much hot water and how much electricity it uses. Your definition and your wife's definition of efficiency is more likely: can this thing get the dishes clean in 30 minutes or less, instead of being completely energy efficient that takes 2.5 hours like my new dishwasher does. And the same thing goes with washing machines. So you're limited. Their choices of what they can buy, your listeners, are limited to government-approved appliances. And we should have – I'm really big. I'm huge. I'm a pro-choice guy. And by that, I mean I'm pro-choice in giving your listeners and everybody in America the ability to make their choice of what they want to put in their homes and not be limited to government-approved devices.
you know, it's not like the government's going to be looking out for your best interest, making sure that the appliance works. Rather, this entire thing has been ideologically driven from the start. So they're not going to be, you know, approving, oh, this one's good because it does X, Y, and Z. This one is disapproved because it's a clunker. No, they're just going to be like, well, this one hits the certain agenda goals. So what if it's a total piece of crap? It hits our agenda, and maybe we have a deal with the company that makes it. So we'll just approve this one.
Well, and two, think about it. This particular appeal, the repeal that Zeldin did, it's really done away with the justification to go to electric vehicles. No more. By 2050, some 2030, your options of what type of vehicle you can buy will be, under the old rules, would be completely limited. And that they're going to have to sell X numbers or percentage of electric vehicles out of the Ford fleet or the Chevy fleet or whatever it is. And people are voting with their dollars and their feet. They're not buying electric vehicles. Some are. If you're wealthy, if you're uber wealthy and you're living in the urban area, maybe suburbs, you only commute a few miles, an EV might make sense to you, especially if you want to project your value system and be proud that you're an environmentalist by driving an EV, fine, go ahead. But that should be, again, that goes back to choice. Your listeners should have the right to choose what kind of car to drive, how to heat their home, what temperature to heat or cool your home. And that's really been going more and more to government regulations and government limited by the government, government-approved devices and cars. No, thank you. I want you to, every single person listening to this show right now is probably nodding their head. They're going, heck yeah. You know, we should have the freedom to choose what we want to buy and not be told by the government what we can buy. That's Soviet era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it leads to Soviet era issues like the lack of availability of things because everything's so heavily regulated. Get on the waiting list to get that new dishwasher because only one or two companies are approved by the government to manufacture it.
Yeah, and that's what it does. It's they're not only limiting your choices, but they're making everything more expensive. And again, the free market should make those decisions and the ability of your listeners to choose. Your listeners are smart people. They should be able to judge one against the other and make that call themselves.
Yeah, and if most of these the environmentally friendly ones were also efficient in the way consumers needed, then they would naturally win out in the consumer market. But it's the fact that this technology, no one seems to want it, so the government's like, well, now we're going to punish you for not wanting it by forcing you to buy it.
Exactly. And this regulation that they're trying to repeal, the endangerment finding, I'm really confident that the Supreme Court, when it finally gets there, will rule in favor because they had two rulings last year that demanded that when regulations are imposed and they're considering it, they have to consider all of the science. And the Obama administration, EPA, did not consider anything contrary, anything that went against this notion of man-made catastrophic warming. Was not even considered, and they need to consider it. And there's overwhelming, huge amounts of scientific data that says, no, CO2 is not a pollutant. Yes, CO2 is hugely beneficial. We see it when we look out. Just look out your window. Look at all that green. You should say, thank you, CO2, for all of the vegetation. It's exploding from the near polar regions to the equator because of more CO2. We should treasure that.
All right. Well, thank you, Gregory Wrightstone, for being on the Silker Joe Show to talk about this. And listeners, he is the executive director of the CO2 Coalition and has a book out, A Very Convenient Warming, How Model Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. More Silker Joe Show after this break.
With summer in full swing, a new survey is making waves and raising eyebrows about what really happens in America's swimming pools. The 2025 Healthy Pool Survey finds nearly half of swimmers admit to regularly rinsing their dirty feet or sandals in the pool, turning it into a communal foot bath. Three-time Olympic gold medalist and swimming safety advocate Rowdy Gaines urges swimmers to think twice.
This isn't just gross, it's dangerous. Chlorine is meant to kill germs, but it can't do that as effectively when it's overloaded with, say, dirt, sand, and other contaminants.
In response, the American Chemistry Council and Pool and Hot Tub Alliance are raising awareness of how swimmer habits directly affect water quality.
Everyone plays a role in pool safety. You may be tempted to dip your feet or flip-flops in the water, but find that nearest shower and rinse off there instead. That small step can make a big difference in keeping pools safe and healthy.
Learn more at healthypools.org.
According to the U.S. Army, nearly 50% of military recruits come from rural areas, despite less than 20% of the U.S. population living in those communities. This strong representation highlights the deep tradition of service rooted in rural America, a connection that one company is uniquely positioned to celebrate. Marty Scold Jordan, executive director of the Tractor Supply Foundation, explains about her company's Hometown Heroes program to honor and help.
Tractor Supply knows our active military, veterans, and first responders pay an incredible price for protecting us and keeping us safe. These are our everyday hometown heroes who have answered the call. And so the Tractor Supply Foundation is awarding $100,000 grants to 10 organizations that support these heroes. In addition, we're honoring local hometown heroes in our stores nationwide and offering all hometown heroes everyday savings and exclusive benefits through our Neighbors Club.
To learn more about the Hometown Heroes program, go to tractorsupply.com/hometownheroes.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball!
Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome to the So great, Joe, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. Thank you for sticking with us through this program. You know, we're now in the second half of it, starting off the second half with a monologue. And I ended up with a guest. Those of you listening since the beginning might have not expected that. Well, I wasn't expecting that either, but good things happen to people. I'm not going to say I'm a good person. Anyway, so I'm talking a little bit about the... in the opening segment anyway, about the D.C. Takeover by Trump. And, the mayor, apparently before she left town, she started a lawsuit against Trump over it. So, I guess, here's a headline from Breitbart. Sanctuary no more. Trump's federal takeover in Washington, D.C. leads to police working with ICE agents. Well, isn't that nice? They're working with ICE agents to help keep the streets clean, although from what I've seen... You know, the various times I've visited the D.C. area, I'll watch the local news. It's actually might be more of the citizens who are the problem in D.C. at this point. Anyway, so the mayor, though, initiated a lawsuit, I guess, and then just fled, went off to Martha's Vineyard. Yeah, I got the lawsuit going. What else am I going to do? I'm going to take a break. Bye, everyone. Bye. See you later. Good luck with the tyranny or whatever I'm calling it. Bye. It's crazy what they can get away with when they have uniparty rule, when there's only one party in charge, because, again, D.C., it's the party of the Democrats. It's the city of the Democrats, and we've seen where that goes. The crime got so bad that the Democrats in charge feared that the voters would put them out and actually vote Republican in a place that voted 94% against Trump, so they had to doctor the crime statistics to cover that. And, you know, it kind of boggles the mind how bad they let the city get. And instead of actually, why didn't they actually, if they were so concerned about the crime, why didn't they take steps themselves to do anything about it? Is it just that they're that incompetent, that they don't know how to handle the crime? Or is it because their ideology has handcuffed them? And they're like, we can't actually do anything about the crime because then we're just as bad as the Republicans or we're racist or whatever. Actually, that seems to be the case. I mean, I played a clip of this on the Al Nathan show earlier this week when I was hosting. It was MSNBC's Simone Sanders Townsend kind of saying that they need to rethink what it means to be safe in a city. Because instead of actually enforcing the laws and stopping crime, she wanted them to rethink what it meant to be safe. It's like, what, am I supposed to think now that it's safe if there's someone having a shootout in my front yard? Am I supposed to feel safe that there's someone pointing a gun at me in my own house? Am I supposed to feel safe if my daughter is getting molested on the way to work? Like, what exactly am I supposed to rethink about safety here? It should be a rather simple thing, right? I can walk freely in the streets without any problems. But this Simone Sanders Townsend person doesn't seem to think that that's the case. She seems to think that, and her thinking... It seems to be in line with the rest of the Democrat Party on this matter, which is how crime got out of control in D.C. in the first place, and why they felt the need to doctor the statistics, but also did not feel the need to actually do anything to fight the crime. You know, it would seem that if you wanted to make crime go down in your city, you would actually do something to fight it. But I guess they were really hoping that no one would notice. If crime got out of control, everyone would be like, oh, well, it's just city living that you got mugged 3 times on the way to work today. That's just what happens in a city. No, it's not. There's plenty of Republican cities that are perfectly safe to walk at night. And heck, even New York City is safer to walk at night than D.C. MSNBC's Joe Scarborough said as much. So, like, there are other cities to compare it to, but it's like they're thinking that they're in a vacuum where you can't go to another city and find out just how nice it is there. You can't go onto social media and see everyone around you posting about crime. You can't go to the flippin' next door website and, you know, sign on and give it your neighborhood and see how much crime is in the area. You can't go to spotcrime.com and see how much crime is in the area. No, you are just in a vacuum. You are totally unaware of what's going on around you, except you might have a slight subjective experience of having been mugged or shot or some other crime committed against you. on the way to work or just in your own home, and that's the only experience you have to determine how much crime there is in the area. And then they're hoping to gaslight you and say, well, that doesn't mean there's crime, that just means it happened to you, sorry for you, but the city is perfectly safe and you're just a lunatic who is anti-black or whatever, because Simone Sanders is out there saying you're racist if you want police around. She actually, you know, said that as a black woman, she is, does not want police around. She doesn't feel safe around police. But the thing of it is, one in 422 black women are incarcerated versus one in 147 white men. Okay, that's out of the population of whites in the country. If you go around asking 147 white men, you might encounter one who has been to prison or who has been incarcerated, who is currently incarcerated. Whereas with black women, you'd have to go to 422 different ones. So white men are almost three times more likely to be incarcerated than black women. Yet Simone Sanders is out there saying black women are the ones who have a lot to fear from the police, even though it seems they're a third less likely to have anything to worry about. Anyway, that is, again, that's the kind of anti-reality thinking that you have by the Democrats. If we don't want it to be true, we're just going to say it's not true. And the irony is, the big irony is, you had on CNN Democrat strategist Julia Rozinski, or Rozinski? Yeah, it was Rozinski. She was talking about how Republicans are the ones who are against reality when it comes to the crime figures in D.C. Well, those crime figures were doctored. In fact, there's been trouble. The police union has been coming out saying for a month now, before the D.C. takeover, they were coming out saying that the figures were doctored. In fact, there was an opinion piece over at The Hill at the end of June talking about how the police in D.C. were doctoring the numbers to make the city government look good. So That is the nature of this doctoring here. That is what the reality is, and we're being told to ignore the reality. And as CNN's analyst Ellie Honig pointed out, even if those numbers were real, even if they weren't being fabricated by the police departments, even if the numbers were legitimately as low as they claim, that's still not good. The numbers are still terrible for D.C. If D.C. were a state, it would have the highest crime in the country. So it's like the fourth worst city in the country. So it is really terrible there. They have a lot to improve on. And just saying that, these numbers are great, nothing's wrong, nothing to see here. No, they're not great. Even if they were legitimate, you still would need a law enforcement surge like this to get things under control. And again, it's a CNN legal analyst who's pointing this stuff out and saying that law enforcement surges like that are also very common for police. So there's nothing unusual about what Trump is doing. There's nothing really fascist or dictatorial about it. Maybe they're questioning the reasoning, questioning how long he's going to do it. But as far as the necessity of it, yeah, it absolutely is necessary, even given the numbers that are officially accepted, where everyone's trying to downplay, oh, it's down 26% from last year. Okay, well, it's down from being the murder capital of the country to being slightly lower than the murder capital of the country. Maybe you should still improve the numbers. Maybe you shouldn't be tooting your own horn there. You know, that's like if I said, oh, well, you know, I hosted a quarter of the show today, and then I hosted half of it the next day when I was supposed to have hosted the whole damn thing both days. Yeah, my boss should fire me for that. But that kind of reasoning apparently works when you're a Democrat in office. And again, they are so worried about the numbers that they felt the need to doctor it in a Democrat safe haven. That's how bad crime is. That's how out of control it is that they have to doctor them. And one thing, one of the guests I talked to pointed out that one of the things that Democrats are really scared of is that Trump's idea for law enforcement here will work, that it will make the city safe. It will show the residents that, yes, D.C. can be a safe city. Because under Democrat rule, they hadn't had a, when was the last time D.C. had a Republican mayor? Never. It has been a very long time since the last D.C. Republican mayor. In fact, this AI thing has taken a hell of a time to generate this answer to the question. I didn't plan this out. So actually, I guess the first elected mayor, every mayor has been elected as a Democrat, right? There were no Republican mayors since 1973 when D.C. was allowed to rule itself, given the Home Rule Act, which allowed them to elect a mayor. There have been no Republican mayors. So they have themselves to blame for everything that's gone wrong in that city. But it's easier to just phony up some statistics and gaslight your citizens and say, oh, you were mugged or raped. Well, that's just a very unique thing. It's your fault, your problem. And we're not even going to drop the charges against these people who are doing these things to you as well. As was the case, I've talked about some specific crimes on the Al Nathan Show earlier this week that should have had charges, but didn't. More Silk Road Show after this break.
Looking for a career path with strong pay, room to grow, and real impact? The U.S. energy industry is growing fast with a need to fill 32 million jobs in the next decade. Gabriela Colon is a recruitment manager at National Grid.
When people think of energy jobs, they picture engineers or skilled trade professionals like electricians and technicians. We've got plenty of those jobs open, but we also need professionals in areas like IT, communications, finance, cybersecurity, and more.
You don't need industry experience to pursue an energy career. Ignacio Estella is SVP of Talent and Innovation at AvantGrid.
Our industry values skills-based hiring and provides on-the-job training, making it accessible for those with a strong work ethic and a willingness to learn, even without a college degree. Whether you have a GED, a PhD, or something in between, there are opportunities in energy.
Visit getintoenergy.org to explore different career paths and search openings.
A critically acclaimed docuseries returns to Prime Video with a compelling and powerful new chapter. Shiny Happy People, A Teenage Holy War, reveals teenagers being exploited, manipulated, and converted into soldiers to make America a Christian nation at any cost. The three-part series focuses on the controversial organization Teen Mania, once America's largest youth ministry, which attracted millions through their wildly popular stadium shows. Teens filled colossal stadiums, sang religious rock anthems, swore purity oaths, and embarked on culturally questionable global missions. But beneath the wholesome illusion lies a darker undercurrent, brutal spiritual boot camps, and relentless psychological control, all under the command of a charismatic leader with endless ambitions. The previous installment of Shiny Happy People, which unveiled the truth behind the Duggar family, was the number one most viewed documentary series on Prime Video. Don't miss Shiny Happy People, A Teenage Holy War, now streaming on Prime Video.
With peak car buying season coming up, one thing you want to think about is how does that affect your insurance? So a couple recommendations we have is make sure you're always reviewing your policy. Whether you're adding a new vehicle, adding a driver, or just updating your coverage overall, you want to make sure that you're reviewing your coverage and the price. One way to do that is to consult an independent agent because they can help you navigate the tricky insurance buying process. The second thing is, how do you become more insurance savvy? So a couple recommendations we have is to understand some of the basic terms. The first one is deductible. That's the amount that you pay before your coverage kicks in. And it's important to keep in mind that the higher deductible you take, the lower your premium is. But remember, if you do have a claim, that's the amount that you're going to be paying. So you want to make sure it fits within your budget. The second term is premium, and that's what you pay for the coverage that you're getting. One way to find an independent agent is to go to agent.travelers.com and find a local agent near you.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone, for Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Sober Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. Got just one last segment left here. And we've talked before about how insurance companies hide what's kind of mask what's going on in the drug industry and, you know, the medical industry and mask you from what the actual payments and stuff are. Well, it's kind of not the only place where there's a lot of obfuscation and where, you know, there's a curtain to peek behind, so to speak. There's also this group called Pharmacy Benefit Managers who seem to be dedicated to ripping you off. And we're talking now with Dr. Marion Mass about this. She is a practicing pediatrician in the Philadelphia suburbs. She co-founded Practicing Physicians of America and is part of the leadership in the Free to Care Coalition. Dr. Mass, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. So who are these pharmacy benefit managers?
They're the prescription drug middlemen, to put it bluntly, right? These are wealthy organizations that the biggest three, Express Scripts, CVS, Caremark, and Optum, those big three are each owned by one of our big insurance companies. Express Scripts is owned by Cigna, CVS owns CVS Caremark and also owns the insurance company Aetna, and Optum Rx is owned by the United Healthcare Empire. So the PBMs are part of the insurance companies that Americans don't really seem to like very much nowadays. And these drug middlemen, they don't do any research, they don't do any manufacturing, but they sure get to control a lot of the prescription drug money in America. In fact, those three that I mentioned control 80% of prescription drugs.
Wow. That's quite a bit of the market. So it's almost like almost getting to monopoly status here on the market, and they get to control the prices just on a whim as opposed to based on what consumers are needing.
Sure. Yeah. And I love it that you got right to the word monopoly, because it is a near monopoly, isn't it? And it's worse than just having a scenario where it's only a small percentage of companies controlling, you know, most of one sector, because not only, you know, as I mentioned, these are owned by insurance companies. So they control the insurance company, they control the PBM, which controls the pharmaceutical chain. And all of these companies own pharmacies. I mean, we know CVS owns the CVS pharmacies, but there's online and mail order pharmacies that these companies can use their insurance arm, and they can push patients to use the mail order. They can push patients to use their online pharmacies and specialty pharmacies, and they can direct the traffic that way. That doesn't sound much like free market capitalism when you have that monopoly and that vertically integrated network. It sounds more like a cabal, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it certainly can't be beneficial to your health, because, you know, what if there's a certain product you need that the company doesn't make, but so your insurance automatically doesn't cover it, not because of any other reason except the company that overall has a monopoly in this sector that also controls your insurance doesn't want you to go outside and buy someone else's product.
Well, yes, but so there's some of these companies that are starting to get, there's some of the channel companies that are starting to get into manufacture. But as I mentioned, by and large, these companies, these PBMs control it, don't do the manufacturing. But let's let's explain what these PBMs do. They get to create the formulary. The formulary is the list of drugs that covered by your insurance company, right? And in addition to creating the formulary, these PBMs were given an exclusion by our government to receive kickbacks. Isn't that just marvelous?
What?
Like, you know, kickbacks are are illegal for most of America, but not for the pharmacy benefit managers. So now, knowing that these companies create the formularies and they can collect kickbacks, what's preventing these companies from going to the pharmaceutical companies and saying, hey, pharmaceutical companies, you want your drug on the formulary? Well, you're going to pay us. So you're going to give us a kickback. They call these rebates. And at one time, we had very few formulary exclusions in America. Formulary exclusion means like the insurance company PBM won't put a certain drug on the formulary. In fact, if you go back to 2014, there were only 109 drugs in America excluded from formularies. Well, that's gone up by a factor of 10. There's now over 1,200 drugs excluded from formularies. And sometimes these are drugs excluded from formularies where there's only a single maker. You know, for instance, insulin, there's three main manufacturers, right, for the majority of the insulin that America uses. But there's some drugs for diabetes, cancer, autoimmune disease, where there is a single manufacturer because it's still it's under a patent. And there's now over 500 drugs that are excluded from formularies. And when that happens, like we're talking about people with cancer, you know, their doctor says, you really need this drug. This is the drug that works for cancer for you. And the PBM comes along and says, nope, it's not on our formulary. But by and large, what's being talked about is these PBMs are creating the formularies not based on what's good for the patient, but based on the fact that they can collect those kickbacks, which they have the nerve to call rebates. They call them drug rebates, making the patient think that they're getting the money, when in fact, really, the PBMs overwhelmingly either keep the rebates to themselves or they give them to the insurance company that owns them.
So it's almost like, I've been deprived of a life-saving drug because a PBM wasn't bribed properly?
Well, and who suffers the most? It's that patient, right? And then that patient goes back to the doctor and says, we can't get this. So I guess the doctor's choice is either find a different drug. Does it work the same? Hard to know. So if the doctor picks something that's on the formulary, are you getting the best drug for you, or are you getting the best drug that a kickback can buy? And to make matters worse, even when something is on the formulary, because someone's presumably paid enough of a kickback, and there's not really much transparency to these kickbacks and rebates and how much they are for each drug, because why would we bother having transparency when we don't really have free market capitalism here in America, right? Mm-hmm. We have special favors for special companies. But now you have a situation in which, like, even if the drug does make it to the formulary, the cost of the rebate, the amount of the rebate is usually based on a percentage of the cost of the drug. So these PBMs are perversely incentivized to pick an expensive drug. What happens when you have copays? It's usually a percentage of the cost of the drug. So who's paying it more? Sick patients. Money from sick patients.
Well, Dr. Mass, appreciate you being on the show to talk about this. We're about out of time. We have 10 seconds left, though. Where can we find out more about Practicing Physicians of America?
Well, actually, what I'd steer you to is our free to care, free the number two, and then care, C-A-R-E. And we have a report on there that explains a lot of this. It's a report from 2022. It details other things that need to happen in healthcare to lower costs. I'd love to do an updated report, but I'm busy practicing medicine.
All right. We'll have to leave it at that. But listeners, you can go check that out. Our website is mainstreetradionetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.